It was a slap heard round the world. By now, you all know what I'm talking about, and that's going to bring us into our subject today on Conversations with a Calvinist, which begins right now. Welcome back to Conversations with a Calvinist. My name is Keith Foskey, and I am a Calvinist. And I'm excited to welcome today a friend into the, well, I say into the studio, into the Zoom studio, my friend Eddie Exposito. Eddie is a native New Orlean. I'm not sure I'm saying that right. New Orleanian?
Yeah.
Okay. A native New Orleanian. Raised in the suburbs, he was the grandson of a Cajun fisherman, and he is a philosophy graduate with a pre-law background. He's a creative person. He's a musician, a writer, builder, and entrepreneur. He's been married for 30 years. He's raised 4 daughters. And over 20 years, he has served in ministry where he pastored for 14 of those years, and he co-founded and ran a Homeland Missions and Urban Relief Ministry. Currently, he owns a rep group company in the food and beverage and hospitality industry. And on a personal note, I just wanted to mention that I became acquainted with Eddie several years ago through the ministry of Dr. James White. We were both part of his what was called the chat channel. And for those of you who have been longtime Dividing Line listeners, you know what I'm talking about. It was the Pros Apologion chat channel. And I would go in there and I would see Eddie talking, and somehow we got connected. I think we went to a conference and met up at a conference. And then years later, you actually came to our church for mm-hmm. the FIRE conference. And that's when we really got to spend some time together that weekend. And that was great. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and I'm glad to have you. Now, by now, as I mentioned on the introduction to the program, we've all heard about the slap heard around the world. This is what happened last Sunday evening at the Oscars, where there was an interaction between comedian Chris Rock and actor Will Smith, where Chris Rock said something derogatory about Will Smith's wife, Jada Pinkett. Will Smith at first seemed like he thought it was funny. Afterwards, didn't seem like it was so funny. He walked up onto the dais, or onto the stage, rather. He slapped Chris Rock in the face and then went back to his seat like nothing had happened, and just said, you know, keep my wife's name out of your mouth. He used a few expletives, which I won't repeat, but he was saying, don't say anything about my wife. I was actually sick Sunday. Sunday, I came home from church. I wasn't feeling well, so I slept for about 18 hours because I wasn't feeling well. So I slept through everything. Woke up the next morning, and my news feed had blown up with all of these pictures of Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. Did you actually see it, Eddie, on television, or did you see it in the follow-up?
Yeah, I first heard it. I was coming home from New Orleans with a friend in my car. We spent the day going to see some music and having some great crawfish at a musician benefit. And my friend's mom called on the phone and said, hey, you should see Will Smith just slapped Chris Rock on TV. And we're both like, what? Like, what happened? And so, you know, my first thought, of course, was, oh, here we go, right? I mean, we've been bombarded with fake news for real, media stuff, stunts. Everybody knows that since those award shows are all so political and progressive that you know, no one's really watching it anymore. And so my first thought just was like, I bet you it was a stunt, right?
Yeah.
I thought it had to be some kind of gig to get ratings, like the infamous wardrobe malfunctions, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. And that was it. And I got home and it was on the TV. So I looked at it. And then I looked at the Twitter feed. Somebody put a video and they slow motioned it. So he hit him. Like, at first I thought maybe because, you know, the angle of the camera, but it was a real hit, but it wasn't a punch.
Yeah.
So, you know, they do that on stage too. So I don't know. I think my thought went to, well, who knows about that? But my first thought was really, you know, in this culture, we have this weird dichotomy going on, right? Between, oh, love everyone, be peaceful and tolerant, and yet we have tremendous hate and intolerance all masquerading. So I thought, what message is this sending, right?
Yeah.
That you say something off color or an insult, and do I have the right to just slap you upside your head? Which, you know, I get in trouble for that language, right, since I'm old now. You know, we grew up with, like, I'm going to kill you, or we'd say that, hey, you know, I'm going to slap you upside the head. We'd say, my mom would slap me upside my head, or any variants of that. And sometimes it's literal. I mean, I got slapped in the face by teachers in school.
Yeah. My dad used to threaten to, and I quote, slap the slobber out of my mouth. So that was that's very common in my house.
And then today, you know, your own child will call child services on you, right? And they talk about emancipation, and it's a weird world. And I don't know. I mean, on one level, you don't want to justify physically responding, but on another level, those that are older that got spanked and slapped upside the head, I don't know any of us that are in therapy and had any sort of long-term damage from it. Because I think the issue is we knew we deserved it, particularly the teacher that slapped me. I was being a smart aleck big time.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't quit. I kept it up for a long time. She finally had enough, took me outside in the hallway, and I had the nerve to say to her, her name was Miss Thomas, and I kept calling her Tommy Baby. Yeah. And so in the hallway, she's in my face. And I said, you know, I think you're overreacting, Tommy Baby.
Oh, yeah.
And she slapped me. And it was funny because all the kids came up to the window in the school. We had those little square windows in the door. And all the kids were all looking through the window, like 60 of us, you know, looking through. And I'm in the hall. And when she slapped me, you could hear everybody scurry like rats off a ship back to their desks. You know, they're like, oh, no, she just hit him. But, you know, my parents weren't upset. No one filed charges or anything. It just is what, you know, that was, hey, you're out of line. And guess what? It worked. I never spoke like that to a teacher ever again.
Yeah.
So you know, that's why it's an interesting topic. It's there's some gray, but there's also some black and white. There's wisdom and it's multi-layered. And what's the context of it?
Yep.
I mean, you know, like if someone just said, hey, you have, you're four-eyed, you know, or something, versus some other vulgar thing, which I won't say, but we could all interject whatever, some disgusting insult. I think we feel compelled that the harsher and the more degrading and out of control the comment is, I think people in general feel like, well, that merits, you know, a bigger response than just, hey, don't say that to me.
Yeah. Now, you've already sort of answered this question, but I know you mentioned that you have a martial arts background. I didn't mention this in the intro, but you mentioned in one of the posts that you posted on social media that you have a martial arts background. Is it karate? What was that?
Yeah, I took judo and taekwondo.
Okay. So based upon your semi-professional martial arts opinion, you do think it was a real hit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now, of course, he didn't put his shoulder in, right? He didn't step past his body with, you know, as you learn and go through. Hey, done that, he would have knocked him out. But yeah. That was, I call that a stage slap.
Yeah, it was intended. It wasn't intended to hurt as much as embarrass and posture and certainly look more threatening than it was. The fact that Rock, who has to be 80 pounds less, was able to stand up and continue to talk without any seemingly be worse for the wear, seemed to be the fact that he wasn't really trying. Because Will's a big boy. I mean, he's probably 180, I would say, compared to Rock, maybe 130, 120. He's a little guy.
Also, I mean, you know, he didn't punch him.
That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, he could have punched him.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the reasons why I asked you on today, other than the fact that you're a very colorful dude, I like, the times we've had conversations, I've enjoyed it. I know it's been a while. But one of the reasons why I invited you on today specifically was because this past week I noticed you made a post where you addressed the subject of bullying. And my assumption and the assumption of some of the people that responded was that you were addressing this issue with the Chris Rock, Will Smith thing. Now, is that the case or are we wrongly connecting the two?
No, that's right. I took it from a specific to general. I mean, I didn't want to talk any more about that because that is what it is and whatever. And on some level, you don't want to bring more attention to all those individuals that want attention. But it made me think. I thought, man, you know, really it's a type of bullying when, you know, people are making fun of you. So my head went to like making fun of people because, Jada has, an autoimmune condition where she has the hair loss. And so he was making fun of that in a sense. And it was a joke and, you know, they roast. I mean, roasting's part of the celebrity thing. And you know, they pick on people all the time and they make fun of a variety of things. So my thoughts went to making fun of people and, oh, someone who's fat. And they say, hey, let's give Keith all the leftovers. Right.
Right. Then there. Hey, I was going to talk about the fact I grew up in a culture where I'll say it. When I was a kid, there was the where's the beef was the thing. And the joke was, where's the beef? It's on Keith. That was a joke that I still remember to this day. You know, it was real. Yeah, for real. Yeah.
I mean, I got glasses and I was so upset when I was told I had to wear glasses because I knew that they'd call me four eyes and pick on me. And so, you know, I thought about that and there's a whole variety of things. Like when I was in college, we had a group that would meet. We had a little part of us would play music and then we would go eat in between classes. And it started out really nice, but then all of a sudden at lunch, someone would say something like someone had a big nose and they were like, well, I'll pay for the drink, but I'm not going to pay for the air because it's free. Right. So and so.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if people chuckle. One guy was going gray. Another guy was losing his hair. One girl was known as being a little promiscuous, you know. So all of a sudden we're eating lunch and people start picking on everybody about those things. And it got to the point where it's what I call one-upmanship, right?
Yeah.
Where, right? It's like, oh, someone got you and they're going to get me. And then people begin to retaliate with another insult. And it got to the point that it was so bad. I confronted everybody one day. I just slapped the table and I said, man, what are we doing? Trashing everybody. I'm like, so that's another point, right? You don't want to be a person who says you can never joke with anyone, right?
That's
you can
right,
never say anything. But where's the line? That's the issue. Where do you draw the line? And I think we can talk about some parameters. Like, I think you know if someone doesn't like what you said.
Yeah. If you know it's hurting them. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had a lady I know who, she washes Ziploc bags and she cleans aluminum foil. And you go to her house, you got to take your shoes off. She's quirky, kooky as can be. So I began to make jokes about it. Right. I'm like, I said, oh, I brought a couple Ziploc bags for you, you know, you can reuse, right? Stuff like that. Well, she laughed, but then it hit me. I said, wait a minute. Maybe she doesn't like this. And so I asked her, I said, look, you know, I love you and I'm just chiding and ribbing you. And we had a good conversation about it. And she gave me a license to say things. She says, no, as long as you don't go overboard. But I backed off. I didn't say anything, but it got me thinking. So through my whole time, you know, my whole life, I've been thinking about that topic of picking on. And it's a picking on people for their appearance, their behavior, their background. I mean, you know, in New Orleans, there's the West Bank, there's Kenner, there's New Orleans. And, you know, when you went to high school, it was the West Bankers and they were looked down upon. You got people from Chalmette called Chalmatians and they would say, oh, he's a Chalmatian. Yeah. So look at schools, right? Oh, where'd he go to school? Oh, you went to Jesuit. Oh, Jesuit. You know, they call him the blue gaze. And that was an insult, you know? So private school versus public school. So if you think about it, all facets, there's the chance to degrade people because of where they go to school, where they were born, what they look like, et cetera, or even what they've done. So yeah, that's why I put the post. I thought, man, it's interesting. Teasing is interesting because, you know, when I've confronted some people about it, they're like, oh, you can't take a joke or, you know, we can't say anything. And then you got the topic of sarcasm. A lot of people pride themselves that they're sarcastic, but sarcasm means to shred and it means to tear. And so being sarcastic is not something you really want to strive for, you know, and that brings up the question, why do you do it at all? What's behind that? So for me, as I examined myself, I found I had many layers of why. One, as an intellectual and natural wit, I think of funny things. I think of turns of phrases. I think of, right? So yeah. Part of it is like me just exercising that quick brain that's thinking those things. And then the other part of it is just a certain pride that I always loved, like the W.C. Fields and the comedians that were able to just jab real quick, right? This is, yeah. I love Willy Wonka, my favorite movie ever, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Look at Gene Wilder, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He was slicing all those kids up, right?
Yeah.
So I remember growing up thinking, I want to be able to do that, right?
Mm.
Because it just seemed cool. Then there's insecurity. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a real insecure person. Not that I don't have them, but I mean, I'm pretty self-confident. And it's like, but I think a big thing I discovered about me was frustration.
Mm.
So not so much making fun, but jabbing and responding in that way. It really is because I'm aggravated, particularly when it comes to something somebody did. And I learned that, you know, my brain, I have words that I use that I don't have any problem with. Stupid.
Yeah.
I was stupid. And I've come to realize, you know, I might interpret a word a certain way and it has a certain amount of blow to it, right? Like as in a hit. But if someone called me a name, my personal first response is, well, do I qualify for the name?
Yeah.
Right. So if someone said to me, well, you know, that was stupid. My thought goes, well, was it? Not he called me stupid.
Yeah.
But not everybody's that way. And it took me a long time to realize that I had developed over the years, you know, bad speech patterns. Mm. And then in reference to my family, and got to the point in our relationship where they let me know that they don't like the way I talk to them. Yeah. And I had to really examine myself. What's going on? And I realized it was bitterness, frustration. You know, when you have a kid and they won't pick up something. After the fifth time you tell them to pick the clothes up, your speech might not be very well.
Right? Yeah, it's like the guy who's the teacher came or the parent went to the teacher and said, did you call my child stupid? It's like, no, I asked him if he was stupid. Are you stupid? It's not the same, but it is the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're brain challenged, you know.
Yeah.
But so it's a very interesting topic. And you know, I had some scriptures that I pulled together from some teaching notes I'd done in my own study. And if it's okay, I'll just read some of them.
No, I'd love to hear. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Proverbs has a lot to say. I'm sure you're aware.
Absolutely.
So Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Proverbs 16:21, the wise in heart will be called understanding and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness.
Mm.
Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Proverbs 16:24, 22:11. He whose speech is gracious is the king's friend. He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. Chris Rock could hear that one, right? 21:23, yeah. Proverbs. And then Proverbs 10:19, he who restrains his lips is wise. So we have the Old Testament wisdom literature giving us a lot of warnings, and that's just a few highlights, right? Of
sure.
Watch, we could say in modern language, hey, boy, watch your mouth.
Yeah. Right?
And,
yeah.
You know, watch, right? And then the New Testament picks that up. So Colossians 3:8, put aside anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth.
Mm.
Let your speech always be gracious, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. And as I reflected on those things, I was big time convicted. Like, boy, it's not that I'm ignoring it. It's just I'm not practicing.
Sure.
So I know it. I believe it. I know it's what I should do. And like we all do, you end up in a place where you're like, what's going on with me?
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's why this is a real thing. When I saw that incident, it just opened the gates in my head of all the things that I've been working hard to correct.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we sort of touched on a little bit earlier is when we get around people that we're very comfortable with, we tend to let down the natural guard that we put up. And one of the guards that we let down is the guard over our mouth. Because when we first meet somebody, we're usually very, very particular about what we say. But after we get to know them, we've been in their house, they've been in our house, and we banter. Banter often becomes really unsanctified speech. It's a nice, I guess, a nice way of saying it. Speech that's intended to make things fun, but at the same time, at what expense and to what end?
Yeah.
You know, this
I've when I noticed one of my kids being real sarcastic, I confronted her and I said, you know, what's with all the sarcasm? And I explained it to her. And, you know, obviously, right? She's like, well, you know, I'm just playing around. Can't people take a joke? That's what you do it a lot. So just examine yourself. Why do you do it? What's behind it? And most people never think of it. They just do it, or they're imitating other people. And I came up with a general rule that I said, and is to the extent that a person, their personhood, their identity, their characteristics, to the extent that they are the butt of the joke or they're the punchline, is to the degree that you run the risk of going into big trouble. Mm. First and foremost, hurting their feelings, et cetera. Like you said, I got good friends of mine. If they jab at me, whatever. But if they do it 3 and 4 times in a row, or they're always bringing that up, then it's an issue. So there's room there, and that's the weird part, right? Like how far can I go? Well, I say, how about you don't worry about how far you can go? How about you just learn and strive to eliminate it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the safest thing is to bridle the tongue, which we'll look at James in a minute and see that. I mean, you know, that tongue is dangerous. And I think an awareness that your tongue, your speech, right, is a weapon.
Yeah.
And it can also be a healing balm. And so you can use it for good things, right? As scripture says, to bless God and to bless people and bring grace, or you can rip people to shreds.
And that's the scripture, right? It says, how can we with the same mouth, and I think that's the James passage you were going to reference, the same mouth praises God and then tears down your neighbor.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, we all have like a guy keeps parking on our driveway or something, right? So again, situational, and we feel justified that the more stress or the greater the offense of the individual, then we get to rip them one, you know, and I'm going to let them have it.
Yeah.
You know, just get on customer service telephone holds. Well, you know, and you
hold on. I feel like I was just rebuked. So I'm going to.
Honestly,
she worked for Bell South, and she was a customer service representative, and I did as well, but I was never as good as her. She was always so great, but I have such a difficult time over the phone because they make you wait forever, and then when you finally get on with somebody, they don't ever want to help you. It seems that way. And so I have a patience issue, and I have to repent, and I have to deal with my own heart in that. So you just got real you touched a nerve there, brother.
Man, I mean, you know, press 3, press 2, press, yeah. and then you wait, and then they hang up, and then the next person comes on, and it's real hard to be nice to that person.
Yeah.
You think they hung up on you when they didn't, you know?
Yeah.
But
and then it's really hard to share Jesus with that person when you've been a jerk and you're saying, oh yeah, and by the way, I want to tell you about the Lord who loves you, and I've just treated you like a dirty sock. So yeah.
No, it's a challenge, and I think, you know, again, it all starts with being conscious of it instead of giving yourself an excuse, and then asking yourself why. So what am I doing here? And you know, being so frustrated with people in search of circumstances, I think that's a big part of it. Some people, I mean, just be honest. I mean, look, we know this, right, from the truth of theology. This is a sin-cursed world. Not only do we still have a battle, but we're always expecting life to be better than it is when actually it's far worse than we could imagine. It's just that we're not always given so much that we freak out all the time. But, like, you know, in this culture with the COVID stuff, just the insanity, gas prices up, people losing their jobs, arguments about vaccines, you know, whatever, all this stuff. It's a lot harder to control the tongue because you feel like you're going to go off, right? You're like, wait, you know, if I hear one more thing or whatever. So I think it's a good thing. It starts there. And then, what helped me was, you know, to realize that, I have a powerful tool, and it's just like walking around with an impact driver or something, right? Are you just going to go around and strip all the heads you can find? Or are you going to realize, you know what? I can help. I could pull this screw out, or I could jam it in and split the wood. And, you know, to look at your tongue in that way of a blade, a knife, sword, or a drill, whatever works for you, a flamethrower, or as the scripture says, right? Ignited as a flame from hell. Now, you know, think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really one of Satan's biggest tools to divide is the tongue. And that, what is gossip? A lot of people think gossip's fine, but gossip's considered a damnable sin. And a lot of people are offended by that. They're like, gossip, like, that doesn't seem like it's that bad, but it goes right to all these passages.
Yeah, and it's in the list, the same list that says haters of God and murderers and gossips. Yeah, and slanders. Yeah, yeah, it's right next to that.
So the way I describe it to people is I say, listen, what's wrong? And I said, what's the big deal? And I said, well, think about it. You're not bringing grace to them. You're not giving them wisdom. You're not loving them. You're not caring for them. You're not lifting them up. Gossip is really a form of tearing them down, right? What did you hear? You heard what happened to Keith. I mean, what was he doing? You know, blah, blah, blah. it's this little whispering. And so it's all in the same category. And it's definitely a challenge. And I think that going back to the heart issue, which again is a very biblical principle, right, is keeping your heart in the right place. So be a person to understand the grace of God that's been given to you, specifically those of us who profess Christ. Your sins are forgiven. And so stop holding everything against everyone else, or we're the servant that grabs the debt-free guy, right? We grab his throat and say, hey, pay up, right?
Yeah.
So to keep your heart in the right place, to guard your heart, right, from the issue, from it flow all the issues of life. And so. Yeah. Such a key, and taking a breath. You know, for me, sometimes I'm highly motivated, highly energetic. I'm like, I'm always going. I got a lot to do. And I found that's part of it. I'm going along. And if you're in the way and I don't get a response, right, I'm like, hey, get out of here. You know, I'm like, get, I got time. It's being snippy and snappy. That's part of it. But I think another big thing is the bullying aspect.
Yeah.
What's very bothering about that is, you know, to purposely attack someone verbally to degrade them, right? To belittle them. I don't think the individual comedian that we're not going to mention his name again. I don't think he was trying to belittle at all. I think he was legitimately just trying to be funny, because that's what comics do. They just rag people, you know?
Yeah.
But let's just say that's not the case. Like someone who's overweight, you know, why would you say, hey, fat? Do you think they woke up and looked in the mirror and thought they were skinny?
Yeah.
You know, and what about being skinny? Some people get ragged because they're skinny. Like, hey, you need to eat.
Yeah.
Right?
So I've had people post on our YouTube page, and my wife has to not look at our YouTube page sometimes because people are very mean and, you know, are very ungracious. One, I'm a pastor. Two, I'm a Christian. Three, I'm a Calvinist. Four, I'm fat. There are these things. And so pick any one of those and people are going to find something that they're offended by or something that they want to correct me on. And, my wife just has to sit back and just not look at it because it hurts her. And I tell her, you know, I developed somewhat of a thick skin because I've been big all my life. I mean, from birth almost, I was a big baby, big kid. I was when I was played football in the eighth grade, they called me the biggest of the big blue. Our school colors were blue. So we were the big blue and I was the biggest of the big blue. I was 6'1", 280 pounds in eighth grade.
Wow.
And so, I was just a big guy. And, and so I dealt with that. You know, and again, now if somebody says something to me, I'm less likely to get offended, but it's still, it's one of those things where I know if somebody's really trying to hurt me, and these people online are really trying to get me, trying to hurt me, whereas a friend who might say something in a jovial way, my brother or something, less likely to take offense. But you're right. If somebody were to just, if you could tell the intention is to hurt, it can be very hurtful. And as Christians, are you know, the whole season with salt and words of grace and things, that should not be our intention. Now, it's one thing if somebody took me aside and said, hey, brother, let's talk about weight loss. Let's talk about health. Let's talk about your eating. You know, let's talk about your exercise routine. That's different because that's somebody who cares. That's somebody who cares about you versus somebody who's just being demeaning.
Right. Yeah, I'll share with you a couple other examples that hopefully can help people, like, as I dealt with this topic in general. You know, being outspoken and out there, people, I don't know what they say behind my back, but, you know, one of the things was when I go to conferences and the FIRE conferences, which I love, and I'm a storyteller. Anyone knows me, you know, I'm gregarious. I got about 100 stories. And I got 10 new ones this week, and I love telling stories. It's just fun. And when I go to the conferences, I'd be sitting there speaking with, you know, 4 or 5 people sitting around, and everyone's like, you know, listening and some funny adventure thing or something. And inevitably, someone would walk up and, like, come behind me and say, oh, and grab me by the shoulders and say, oh, here he goes. You know, he's talking again. Or how many stories does this make? Or, you know, hey, let someone else have the floor, right? And it happened so much that my feelings got hurt. I was like, dude, I'm just trying to have fun. Like, what, you know, I didn't feel like I was stopping anyone else from saying anything. But one of the things I realized is that I'm a social space filler, right?
Mm, yeah.
So if you go to a party, no one's talking, I'm going to start it up, right? It's like, yeah. Well, if there's gaps, so – I'd made a decision the next conference I went to, I wasn't going to say anything. So I purposely put the reins on. Guess what happened? People came up to me and they're like, you feeling okay?
Yeah. What's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Yeah. And they said, hey man, you know, where's the story? I was looking forward on the plane. I was looking forward to Eddie's going to have some great stories. And I was like, gee man, I can't win. Like, which is it? Either I'm talking too much and I got too many stories, or, you know, whatever. So that set me again on that personal journey, right, which is lifelong, of, oh, is it right or wrong? What should I do? So and then at the same conference, I was at the book table, and a pastor comes up to me, and I'm looking at these books, and he says, oh, he's looking at books. And the guy behind the book table says, yeah, he's checking them out. And he says, I didn't even know he could read.
Mm.
Now, I was not offended at all. I thought that was funny because I know the guy and I know there's no way he's trying to, you know, degrade.
Yeah.
So I laughed. And by the way, I didn't think the guys making fun of the stories and stuff were degrading either, but that hurt my feelings. The illiteracy thing was like, okay.
Yeah.
But 15 minutes later, that pastor walked up to me privately and he says, man, listen, I need to apologize. Mm. And I looked at him like, for what? And he told me, That was an insult. And he says, I really shouldn't be insulting you. He goes, you know, I love you. He says, you're one of my favorite people, et cetera. And that taught me a lesson. I was like, how many times do people do that to me? Mm. Right? Like, it doesn't matter his conscience was his guide. So, you know, that led me on that particular path of examination and wondering. And so I started to restrain myself, and I might give 100,000 words, but that's the edited version because I really wanted to say 200,000. And I told 5 stories, but they didn't know I had 20 of them ready to roll because that's what I love and what I like. So I did bring some restraint because for that, but it stopped hurting my feelings because I just came to terms with me. That's who I am. Yeah. That's why anyone knows me. That's why people like me, or that's why they don't like me, but I'm not going to change me. Right. So, you know, all those layers come in with people and their experience. Like, some people were very verbally abused by parents. I've been guilty of some of that myself, for which I've made amends with my family. The stress of life and everything else, my sin, of course, response, no excuse, zero excuse. But I woke up one day and they still love me, but they were really upset with me that I'm always given the verbal lashing and or the attitude or sarcastic or what is the phrase? Oh, passive aggressive, you know? So I've been working very hard to eliminate that. And again, it goes back to centering in grace, centering with God first and foremost. And if you will, I'd like to read the James passage because I think it really summarizes that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So James 3, verses 3 through 10 says, now, if we put the bits into the horse's mouth so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defies the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. Mm. Every species of beast and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it, you were referencing, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and curse. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. I mean, whoa. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty harsh. Set on fire from hell. It's like, it's not just, oh, I didn't mean it. And that's another thing. You got to get convicted that this is evil.
Yeah.
It's evil to rip people up. It's evil to talk smack. It's evil to gossip. And so you got to heighten the offense on the objective level.
Yeah.
I mean, if I shredded you and called you all kind of names and it doesn't bother you, that doesn't give me a license to do it.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
He was, oh, I quit being a ninny. It's like, well, why do you want to be insulting people? Why do you want to be doing those things? And as we mentioned earlier, there's different reasons and levels, but I think it's a good thing to pursue cleaning it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've witnessed relationships even in my own life that over time have soured and even divided because eventually you were so comfortable that there was that it just seemed like there was nothing left to do but hurt each other. And with these comments, I know that maybe seem like I'm exaggerating, but it just seems like every conversation you're in is just this constant, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the one-upsmanship of embarrassing,
yeah.
You know, do you remember the time Keith did this or the time Eddie did that or the time
yeah.
that, you know, and it's always that. And
yeah,
there's nothing yeah. constructive, nothing that builds anybody
no,
up.
No, that's right. No substance. It's like, what are we doing here? Just one-upping. And I think in my experience, you know, my guy friends, that'll happen on a fishing trip. And the whole time it's, oh, he can't bait a hook. Oh, you can't catch him. Again.
Yeah.
There's a place for some of it, but if that's all there is,
yeah.
It's like, well, what are we doing? And, you know, Ecclesiastes says there's a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. And so I think that comes into play too, some more wisdom of like, there's a time to laugh. There's a time to have some fun and kid around. But again, remember, when you're kidding around, just picture yourself dancing with these razor sharp weapons. And it's like, you better watch what you're doing. So it's not eliminating all forms of it, but it's knowing your audience, knowing the context, having some sensibility, being conscious of it. And, you know, that'll go a long way, but you're right. It's amazing. Some relationships just go south because you got nothing to say, but to insult each other or whatever.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned the weapons, having those razor blades. You know, when we practice in our karate class, and I do, we have our karate class here at the church. I still do it after all these years. I'm getting old, but I'm trying. And, you know, we use rubber knives. Nobody stands there with a real knife because we know the danger and we know the difference between what's real and what's not real. And oftentimes you're right. People are throwing out real knives. People are throwing out real blades and they're expecting everybody to treat it like it's a rubber knife and it's not.
Yeah. So, you know, if you take those points in James, he's saying that the speech, it directs our entirety. It's small, but very powerful. It's set on fire the entirety of our lives if used incorrectly, right? And another way to put it would be it's a restless evil full of deadly poison. So, well, when you start thinking about that, it's like, I better watch myself, right? Instead, we should have, you know, use it to calm situations, to bring peace and grace, to help people. And sort of like a passage into forgiveness, too, because think about it, forgiving people, and that's a big thing with that. And, yeah, it's a great topic. I think one that needs to be addressed more. I mean, I don't know. I think the generations that are younger seem to have a thinner skin. It's a different world. I think parents today seem to protect kids too much from everything.
Well, that was actually going to lead me into the next question I was going to ask, and maybe this will take us into another portion of the conversation, because we've kind of dealt with ourselves and even our children as bullies, telling, you know, talking to them about how they talk to others and metering their speech and being kind and using words that build up rather than words that tear down. And all those are good things. But what if our children are the object of the bully? How did you, raising four daughters, and I know I have five children, how did you raise your children to deal with bullies from them being the victim rather than them being the sarcastic one or whatever? How, you know, what was your counsel to them, and would you have changed anything now? I don't know how old your girls are, but.
Yeah, from 26 to 19.
So they're all adults. Okay. All right. Yeah.
We didn't really have too much of it to deal with. One reason would be that they were homeschooled. So, you know, their sisters might go after them, but it was, you know, that was dealt with pretty quickly. But like, as far as like a bully, my youngest two ended up going to an art school in New Orleans called NOCA, and they encountered some, what I would call bullying there. It seems to be there's different shades. There's bullying, like physically being pushed up against the lockers and things like that. But verbally, you know, there were some issues with that, and we talked about it. And my advice was ignore as best you can, also to talk to them and just say, hey, you know, why are you, what's up? Like, what's the story here? And if they're not going to engage you and talk to them, be sensible about it, then disassociate. Basically, they're not your friend. Doesn't matter what clique you're in, whatever. You disconnect. And you can eat. And I like to tell them, say, you know what? I no longer want anything to do with you because you're rude, obnoxious, you know, whatever. And just say, if you want to change, you know, you want to change, that's great, but I'm not going to be a part of it. And to cut them off. But I don't like to just ignore. I think people need to be spoken to. Physicality is a different issue. Maybe that's another podcast.
Well, you know. Just for the listener's sake to know, I did a podcast on self-defense with a martial arts instructor. I do believe in the right of an individual to defend themselves from physical danger, as well as the responsibility of parents and fathers in particular to protect their children, to protect their wives. So, And I look at that even within the context of Matthew 5, where Jesus talks about turning the other cheek. I don't think that that means that I'm supposed to stand idly by while my wife is being raped, as some people have said. I don't know if you've heard that, but there are some pastors who take that to the point where
I know exactly who you're referencing, and I 100% disagree.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. That's insane. I mean, you know, men need to stand up against evil in all its forms, and physical violence and all, of course. You know, I got picked on in high school. Just one guy was a big jock. He was about your size, and he came up behind me, and he kept pushing my head and doing stuff. And I ignored him because at my school, it was a private Catholic school. You get expelled for fighting. So, you know, but it was my martial arts background that helped me, because I came up with a plan. If he did it again, what I was going to do. And I turned around. I faced him, and he didn't expect that because I had walked off. And he kind of said something like, you know, what you going to do? Or, you know, the whole gorilla thing. and I stepped, I know you know this, I stepped past his legs, right, with my hip in. And with all I could muster, instead of punching him, I forearm into the chest, which hit him. And his center of gravity was off, which also kind of went to the judo training. So I basically body flipped him back, straight back. They went flying into the lockers, scared him to death. Scared me to death. I mean, I was nervous, but I just gave him one big hit, you know, and made a lot of noise hitting those metal lockers. And then I took off. And, but I didn't hit him. So when I got called to the principal's office after we got busted, I just explained it. And I had witnesses and friends that said, yeah, he keeps hitting him in the head and stuff. And, they said, you know, okay, well, we're glad you didn't punch him. But you're right. I'm big on teaching self-defense. In all forms. That's a very big life thing.
Yeah. And I've actually had this conversation. What's interesting about this is I have a relative who is not a Christian. And he and I you know, we see each other at family gatherings and things like that. And oftentimes we will get into conversations. It's not usually contentious, but there's obvious disagreement there. And one of the conversations that we had was about bullying, and his response was, I would never teach my children to fight back in any form. And I thought, this is an interesting turnabout, because I think the world would expect me to be that person. The world would expect me as the Christian to tell my children, never stand up for yourself. Where I told him, I said, no, I tell my children to stand tall, be willing to, as you said, I think this is wise, be willing to speak to the person who has offended you and tell them. I do think that's a Christian principle, to tell the person who's offended you, you have offended me, or you're hurting me, and you need to stop. And set a boundary. You are not allowed to go any further, and I'm not going to let you go any further. I'm not going to be your victim. And that's been, and his response was, no, I'd rather my child just take it. And I said, you know, no, okay. But it's just so wild that it was such a turnabout in a larger worldview, it makes sense, because he is more socialistic, and his view is, well, the teacher needs to take care of it, or the administration needs to take care of it. Essentially, and I know this, maybe you may think I'm crazy for saying this, the government needs to be the one who does it, not the individual. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I get it. You know, my girls, I got them for Christmas one year. I looked up the law. You can have a knife up to 3 inches, right, folded.
Yeah.
So I bought them all a pocket knife, and I showed them how to use it in case of sexual assault, kidnapping, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I said, keep this in you, keep it on your purse. And I showed them how to use it. I directed them to the arteries and everything, exactly what to mm-hmm. do. And yeah. I'm like, you know, look, because you know what happens if that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Most young girls don't come back. Okay?
That's right.
And I said, you look them right in the eye and you tell them, I hope you make it quick and swift, because you're about ready to go out, and you better fear God and then get busy. And these are the things you can do. I said, this is a no joke. I mean, you know, we're talking about get pulled in a van type thing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And my wife wasn't really happy with me, because, you know, one of my girls started crying because she thought, mm-hmm. when they're coming to get me. But I'd done enough research, and I was in my head of police officers and stuff that said, better you scare your kid, right? But yeah. They know. At least they know, have a plan. You know that with self-defense. I mean, you know, your body might not work. I know all the moves. I doubt my body will cooperate with a lot of it. Yeah. But at least I know what to do. You know, I'm not like, oh, what am I supposed to do? And what's going on? It's like, I have a plan. I know what's going on. And I think it builds self-confidence. And I think, like you said, I think self-protection is a right. I mean, Jesus, that's debated that passage. But Jesus said, hey, y'all have a sword?
Yeah.
And right. And he said, oh, we have. Well, okay, that's good enough. So I don't think God's against carrying weapons at all and dealing with it. But again, another wisdom issue. But, you know, you need to protect yourself and others. I mean, I think that's a godly thing.
Yeah. And getting back to the issue of bullying versus, you know, like you said, there's a difference between verbal assault versus physical assault, and how we address it. I think being honest, being straightforward, being forthright, telling the person, I don't like this. We need to stop this, or our relationship is going to end. I'm going to go a different direction. We're not going to be friends anymore. We're not going to be acquaintances anymore. I'm not going to eat lunch with you, whatever,
right?
Because I'm not going to be the object of your scorn for just so that you can get your jollies on making fun of me. If you, yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, the speck and the plank comes into play.
That's
so when someone, yeah. Yeah. So you have to learn to both be resilient and tough, but at the same token, address it and not be the one doing it. So, right. You say, so when someone says something, I can't believe he talked to me that way. Well, the first thing you ought to do, right? Galatians 6, you say, wait, have I ever done this?
Mm-hmm.
No, have I ever trashed anyone? Which doesn't make it right. That's not an excuse. It just means that then your response and your offense should be lower, because you realize, wait a minute, they just did what I did. So hold on a second. We're both wrong. That doesn't justify. And, but that's a good thing.
It's like Spurgeon said. He said, don't get too offended when someone speaks evil of you, because they don't know how evil you really are. You know, if somebody says something bad about you, yeah, they don't know how bad you really are. So yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I heard a guy actually use that one time. Someone had insulted him and was, you know, you this and you that, I'm not bad at it. And he looked at him and he said, man, I'm far worse than you could ever imagine.
That's right.
It totally took away all the offense. And the guy's like, what do you mean? And then he told him the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking, and I'm going to start drawing us to a close here. I think one of the things that encourages bullies is the idea that they can get away with it. And I think that's even going back to our original topic of the thing that happened at the Oscars. Both of the men felt like they were doing what they were doing because they had impunity. Certainly the comedian, as you said, I don't think he had any ill intent at all. And the joke was really not, in my opinion, was not intended to be hurtful. It was intended to be humorous, but he certainly seemed to have crossed the line, at least in the mind of the lady. She was offended, which caused the husband to be offended. That's my take on the situation. But he felt like he can get away with it because that's what they do. And then Will Smith felt like he could get away with it because obviously he did it. And then he did get away with it in one sense because he hit somebody and didn't have any charges. What do we, you know, when we're dealing with our, what we're thinking of issues of our treating other people, do we just do it because we feel like we can get away with it? Because we feel like they're not going to do anything or they're not going to say anything. That's not the right attitude. Our attitude should be what's going to build them up, not what can we get away with.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, as believers, we're to bring salt and light. And so it's always it's a supernatural response. The natural response is you eye for an eye. The natural response is you call me a name, I'll call you a name. I mean, I think every kid's been through that, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, snothead. Oh, get out of here. You know, and all these words. And then it becomes an insult festival. So that's the natural flesh position. But the supernatural position is this is a person who's made in the image of God, even though they're corrupted in their nature.
Yeah.
And what God expects from me is to de-escalate this sin fest and to bring grace. And people, you know, the soft answer turns away wrath.
Yep. Proverbs 15 verse 1. That's actually something we do in our karate club. It's called P15V1, and it's a training they have to go through. P15V1, a soft word turns away anger, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And we learn about how to use our words.
Yeah. That's it. It's a pursuit. Like James said, who can bridle the tongue? And the answer is only God through the Holy Spirit. Help me out. And you'll have the right motive, which is, you know, I want to be glorifying God in what I do. And it's good. You know, it's been about 2 years. That's a whole other big story behind all that. But the Lord has taken me to the woodshed and really just really. And it came through my family. And I still struggle. I still have work to do. But praise God, I'm not where I was. And, you know, and I can see the healing in it. And then I could actually have conversations like, well, Dad, why were you so angry with us? And can explain it to them. And not that I'm looking for a pass, but that, to understand where someone's coming from. Just like, you know, someone who was assaulted or sexually particular, whatever. And you see that person, or female, whoever, you know, you're wondering what's wrong with them. She's got an attitude. And it's like, yeah, hold on a minute. Yeah, you back up a little bit. If you knew the background, and you know, in pastoral ministry, you learn that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because people open up to you on backgrounds, and you say to yourself, boy, if everyone knew this person's background, they wouldn't be judging them the way they do.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask one last question, and then I know you got somewhere to go today. You're actually meeting up with a fire brother, right? Did you say?
Yeah. My friend Brian Watson is delivering a paper at the Baptist Seminary. So
oh, wonderful.
I'm gonna go stuff him with some seafood.
Well, I'm going to ask you two questions. One, when did you come to know the Lord? When did the Lord save you? How old were you?
24.
Okay, so you were an adult as well. I was 19, so we were both out of school. I know my greatest time of bullying, being bullied, was when I was in school. If you could go back and say anything to yourself at that point where you were the object of other people's bullying, what would you say to yourself in that moment? Because maybe there's somebody listening. Maybe there's a young person who just happened to pick up this podcast, saw that it was on bullying, and you want to say something to them.
Wow, big thing. I think it's an interesting position because it's what I call emotional equity or emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. And I think the sad reality is that you grow into emotional maturity.
Yeah.
So even if I were to speak to that boy, he was so emotionally immature, I'm not even sure he'd listen, right? Because I think my parents spoke well to me, and it just I couldn't handle being picked on as much. And like I mentioned, my humor was what got me out of trouble.
Yeah.
So I started cracking jokes and stuff. So there are ways to get around that, but you know. You know the old phrase, right? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that's not true.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I would tell him that and just say, it's not as bad as it seems. And, you know, it's about self-confidence, really, and knowing that you just have glasses on. Why? What's the deal? Why is it so upset? But I think when you're at that stage in life, you're so vulnerable. You're so sensitive because you're still developing. You're still creating your identity, right? You're still learning about the world. And to have someone come at you harshly and to degrade you and push you down is not a great thing. And I think what I really say is surround yourself with people who don't do it. So mm-hmm. that would be my advice, right? More like, you know, one of the best protections is to, as we say in New Orleans, have some podness, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, have a little pod in the posse, get some quality friends, even if it's just one that you can have someone who does encourage you and to protect you. So when someone comes in from the outside, they can come up with you, right? And say, yeah. Hey, leave them alone. That's probably the best advice.
You know, it's funny when you say that because my worst time of being bullied was in middle school. I was unathletic. I was overweight. I did play football for 1 year, but even then I was not super athletic. I just was big. I was a blocker. Yeah. But when I got to high school, I entered the band. And two things happened. One, I met my band director who became one of my dearest friends. I actually preached his funeral just a few years ago because we stayed close even after high school. He was a mentor in my life and a man I loved very much, and he was great. But I also had a couple of friends in the band who, though we did joke around with each other, we loved each other. We protected each other. In fact, I remember my friend Jimmy, he was really little and I was big, and we jokingly called each other Gilligan and the Skipper because I was big and he was little. And one time we were at a dance and a guy was going to attack Jimmy because he was little. And I stepped in between him. And when the guy realized I was Jimmy's friend, he backed off because he knew he was going to have more to handle at that point. But it just, what you just said about having partners, and having people that protect you and having people that really do care about you, that is very valuable. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I had a couple of big guys in high school. They were the front linemen. One of them went on, played LSU, and I don't know if professional, but his son's now on Saints team. But yeah, I befriended them and you know, there's a few times where they stepped up and they just gave somebody the eye and they were like, oh, okay, that's your friend. Yeah. You know, we got to have each other's back.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Eddie, I want to thank you for being on the show today. I know it was last minute. I just contacted you a day or so ago, but I really enjoyed your post and what you said about bullying and how it related to this. And I know some people may say, you didn't talk much about the Oscars. This really, the Oscars was an inroad to talk about something more valuable. And that's how we treat other people and how as Christians, we ought to be careful with how we use our words. So brother, do you have any final thoughts before we close out?
No.
Okay, that's fine. I know.
I think we covered a lot of it, and I just hope that it's valuable to someone. You know, understand it by way of reminder or by way of encouragement.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Eddie, again, thank you so much for being on. I hope maybe one day you can come back and be with us again. And listener, I want to thank you for being with us today and listening. And I want to encourage you to please like this and share it if it was helpful to you so that it can be helpful to other people. And if you have a question that you would like me to deal with on a future episode, please send me an email at calvinistpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to Conversations with a Calvinist. My name is Keith Foskey, and I have been your Calvinist. May God bless you.